Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Cutting the Curd is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country? For more information, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Erica Wise, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd here on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze and Diane Stemple, your co-hosts for today's episode. How are you, Diane?
Good, great.
Diane and I both spent last week in California at the American Cheese Society Conference in Sacramento. It was an awesome time, and today we want to recap the conference for all of you who weren't able to make it, and for those of you who wish you were still there. On the line, we have Deborah Dickerson, the sales manager for Cowgirl Creamery and a veteran of many cheese battles, organizer of the Festival of the Cheeses, which is exactly what it sounds like, a massive display and celebration of all the cheeses submitted to the conference. How are you doing today, Deborah?
Terrific. Thank you so much.
After the break, we're also going to be talking to Jeremy Stevenson, the head cheesemaker at Springbrook Farm and the Farm for City Kids Foundation. Jeremy's amazing cheese, Tarente's Reserve, won Best in Show at the conference this year. So Diane and Deborah, what are your initial thoughts on the success of the conference this year?
Better than ever. It was the best conference yet, and I have attended quite a few, so I have some standards by which to measure.
Deborah, what do you think was different about this year's conference that made it even better than ever?
Let's see. I was very impressed with the awards that were given to the cheeses entered. I was struck by how many new companies, new cheesemaking companies, were taking awards in, as well as the standbys, those who have created, you know, the industry, like Cypress Grove and Judy Shadiff Capriole. They still, year after year after year, bring home the awards. But I think that there's an influx of new people in the society, new people, new energy, new ideas. And I noticed it this year in much more force than in previous years. So that speaks well for our future.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like there was a good smattering of both states and cheesemakers throughout the winnings.
Yes, I agree. With the conference moving every year from East Coast to West Coast to center of the country, to be able to include all of the cheesemakers, at least giving them an opportunity to come, I was impressed by the representation as well.
Definitely. I mean, Sacramento is a long ways away from where I was, and a place, I got to be honest, that I'm not sure what was, I didn't know what was going to be going on there. But after I got there, I was really impressed with the town. I thought it was a great place to hold the conference.
There was some awfully good food there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was. I have to say, because I needed to say this, there was a lunch restaurant that was right next to my hotel. It was called Bud's Buffet that gave me the biggest sandwich I've had in a long time. And I think like half of them people in downtown Sacramento were at this restaurant, or the working people.
What about Hawk Farm lunch we had the first day?
That was fantastic, too.
Of a salad type place.
And I was impressed with the town. It was really walkable. There was some really good events at the conference, I thought, this year, too. Deborah, what was your favorite, or what was an event or a seminar that stood out for you as being particularly good this year?
Well, I attended practically none because I was prepping the 1,789 cheeses for the festival. But I was really impressed with bringing in things like the salamis and the, you know, the microbes in salamis and the relative association with cheese. I thought that that was great. The other thing that really impressed me is it seemed to me that the panels this year were really thick and meaty, if I may say, in content. You know, there wasn't a lot of fluff. It was really down deep in terms of information that people could take and build upon. And that's, I love to see that. I love to see that.
And they seem to be very well attended. Every time I went, I could barely find a seat.
Well, do you think that that has a lot to do with the emergence of like the CCP and the focus on education for cheesemongers and makers in general?
I think so. And I think also, you know, and Greg, you and I know this better than most, but I think that cheesemongering is a profession that is becoming recognized as one that
it's
is
evolving.
Very honorable.
Absolutely.
And
country.
I think that in that way, we're helping to step up the industry, right? It's not a part-time job to get through school anymore. So
it was
I
my
was
part-time
really impressed
job
with
to get
that. And
school.
There was a lot of there were a lot of classes and seminars also on sanitation and safety, which I think is great.
I am, for those of you who don't know, that Deborah is a veteran of many, many conferences. And how long have you been a cheesemonger, Deborah?
God, since 1988.
That's awesome. We used to run cheese in from England from the Neal's Yard Dairy, and I attended an ACS with Deborah back in, I think, 2001, maybe. And you've been involved with the ACS and the Festival of Cheeses for how many years?
Well, I've worked on the festival for probably 4 years now, coming up on 4 years. And before that, I had the great pleasure of working in the judging, the competition and judging of the American cheeses, which was truly one of the best places to be as a cheesemonger, because we got to see firsthand when the cheeses came in what people were submitting to be judged. And when I started in that role, I think we had 500 cheeses entered in the competition. And this year, again, we had like 1,700 cheeses entered. So you can see the growth curve there, which again speaks well to the industry and to the amazing cheesemakers, who are doing such great things out there.
You know, I want to talk a bit about the massive volunteer efforts that are necessary to pull off ACS. First of all, is the receiving of the cheeses, which Deborah, you were involved in for years, and now you're one of the people in charge of the Festival of Cheeses, which is also a massive undertaking. Do you want to talk about the differences between those two gigantic undertakings?
Well, it certainly does take a village to make it all happen. I think that the ability to see the cheeses coming in, right, which involves receiving them, cataloging them, taking them from their boxes that have been carefully and lovingly packed by the cheesemaker with their fingers crossed that it would make it to Sacramento unbruised and undamaged, right? So that we're unpacking, we're taking the names off them, we're giving them a code so they are anonymous as they make their way through the judging regimen, and then they're judged and they're tagged for winners, whether or not they've won awards or not, and then they're put back into a refrigerated truck again in their anonymity. And for the festival, then we receive them again and they're inventoried numerous times to make sure that we have the cheese we think we have. It is the cheese we think it is. It's in great shape, and then we bring it into the Festival of Cheese where it has its final hurrah, which is what we do at the Festival of Cheese, is that we put all of these cheeses out for the public and for the conference attendees to see. And the Festival of Cheese has gone through a couple enumerations. At one point in time, it was, you couldn't imagine, there was thousands of pounds of cheese displayed at this conference, right? Thousands and thousands of pounds.
Cascading
displays. And what would happen
displays.
At the end of the festival, it was more cheese than anyone could possibly eat. Sure. Any 500 people could possibly eat. And so the cheese was swept into garbage back and taken away, which just broke all our hearts. So about 2 years ago, we decided that what we would do is we would send more cheese to the cheese sale, which happens the day after the conference, and the public comes and buys, and that we would take less to the festival. And the goal, we had two goals. One is that no cheese would be displayed in cubes, right? No cubes. This is artisan cheese lovingly made. Right?
That is a personal standard of yours, Deborah.
Well, yes, it is.
Shared by many.
I hate to see cheese that it takes so long and with so much care to be cut into a cube.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with cubes. There's a place for cubes, but it is not at the Festival of Cheese. So anyway, we had no cubes and then as little waste as possible. We wanted only cheese that could be then recycled by going to pig farmers, right? And just as little as possible, because the cheese sale generates scholarship money for the American Cheese Society. So all cheese must be put to good use.
So none of the cheese at the end of the festival is allowed into the sale, even the chunks?
Exactly, because it's been exposed. It's been exposed to us humans.
Okay,
right?
God knows
what we've done to it.
It was very warm there. I was wondering how did you keep the cold chain just from getting obliterated? I mean,
great question. One of the folks who is on the management team of the American Cheese Society, his name is Steve Binns. We contract with the hotel, and we ask them that we need a room that can come down to 65 degrees, and the hotel agrees that that can happen, and that's the room that we prep in. About 2 weeks before the conference, we learned that this was not going to be possible. So we were panicked, right? Because you get 100 volunteers in a room working feverishly with these cheeses, many of which are soft ripened or relatively fresh cheeses, mozzarella and that sort of thing, and the temperature can easily go up to 80, 85 degrees. So Steve, our hero this year, got us these blasters. They were this huge machine with these flexible tubes that were about a foot in diameter, and you turn on this engine and it blasts out cold air, and it just was, we were cold. We had to wear sweatshirts.
I need one of those for my apartment.
Well, this thing would blow you away. I mean, it was really, it was a phenomenal feat.
Well, I mean, I know it seems like it was well over 100, and to judging, I mean, I've judged in cheese, I judged a couple cheese competitions before, and I mean, when you have those delicate cheeses, like you say, like things with like bloomy rinds and things, like temperature fluctuation just makes those go to off flavors, like just like in a second.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that guy has an important job. That's really great that he was.
Yeah,
able
he
to
did.
Do that.
He really did well. And if I can also say the other thing that we were very cognizant of and have been, it's like when you have people from off the street who volunteer their time, God love them, and you're cutting cheeses one after another, right? We have been very, very careful to make sure that one cheese, the flavor of one cheese, does not affect the flavor of another really conscientious sanitation. So I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of the respect that we gave to each cheese so each could shine on its own. But it is no small feat, I mean to tell you.
One of the things that you did at the conference, which I thought was great, is that you gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to a person who I believe is your mentor from Zingerman's, and Ari spoke about the beginnings of the ACS when there was, I don't know, a handful of cheeses, and it seems so much easier to keep 60 entries separate than 1,400 entries, which it has grown to, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's an amazing process. Both, I mean, I think all the way through the life of a cheese at the conference, it's just it's a lot of organization. And Ari was a part of it at the very beginning, and then we had people like the Silversteins who were also recognized for their contribution. I think it was 2003. We were still using clipboards and clipboards and paper to track the cheese. And when the Silversons came on board in San Francisco, actually, you know, in the in Silicon Valley here, we finally went to computers and pivot tables, and it enabled us to be able to go from, you know, 60 cheeses to the 1,700 that we have now.
Well, the gentleman in question, I never pronounce his name correctly.
Wineswijk.
Wineswijk. And that was a great moment in the conference, I thought. And he is just a very inspirational man who I had never met before the conference in all my years in cheese. And then I ran into him on the street corner afterwards when he was walking back to his hotel. I just was hoping maybe you could just let us into how that felt for you to be able to give him that award and what he has meant to you and that community, or our community at large, in just a few words.
It might be impossible in just a few words. Very, very honored to be able to represent the members of the American Cheese Society, to be able to give that award to Ari. And he is the reason that I am working with cheese today. He is, and his partner Paul Saginaw is absolutely inspirational, and they are the owners of Zingerman's Delicatessen and the Zingerman's community of business with their partners, and they're very creative in the way that they approach business. They're very empowering to their employees and their partners. For those of you who aren't familiar with Zingerman's, you should definitely go online. I highly recommend you order through their mail order, their banana chocolate bread. It's unbelievable. But they make cheese, and each part of their business has a partner, right? So the fellow who makes the cheese, John Loomis, is a partner in the business, and the fellow who does mail order is a partner in the business. So they've really branched out, and it's allowed them to grow, and it's allowed them to really touch millions of people and educate them to good food. The other thing that I'll say is their marketing is just absolutely genius. If you order from them, the boxes are all, they have drawings on them, these adorable caricatures of my banana chocolate bread had a banana that was lying in the sun in the Caribbean with pieces of chocolate melting all over me. Anyway,
sure.
It was adorable. I can only speak to Ari's genius through the specifics of what he does. It's really, and he's one of the kindest people I know. He always answers your email. He always returns your phone call. He always has a moment to talk. Anyway, he inspires me.
Deborah, you inspire lots of us, too. We're going to have to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to continue to talk with Diane Stemple, Deborah Dickerson, and we're going to bring Jeremy Stevenson on. Stay with us.
Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. In the studio, I have my co-host, Diane Stemple, and on the line, we have Deborah Dickerson. We were just speaking about the American Cheese Society Conference, which took place last week in Sacramento. On the other line, we're fortunate enough to be joined by the Best in Show winner for his spectacular cheese, Tarente's Reserve, made in Reading, Vermont. How are you doing, Jeremy Stevenson of Springbrook Farms? What's going on?
Hey, Greg. Back in Vermont, and still feeling that love.
Did people applaud when you got to work this morning?
Pardon?
Did people applaud when you got to work this morning?
No, they didn't organize a committee or anything. No, it was great, though. Everybody could sense, you know, everybody knew how important this was and what an honor it was, you know.
Okay.
So,
Can you tell us what went through your mind when they called your name for Best in Show?
Shock, I think. Immediately, I was just, you know, just very surprised.
You didn't?
And,
you weren't expecting it?
Immediately after that, extremely happy. Yeah.
I mean, we've been buying your Tarentaise Reserve at Italy for a piece. I love that cheese. I love all of the cheeses that that come from you guys. Maybe you could speak just a little bit for those who don't know about the foundation that your farm supports and how that coincides with the great cheese that you make.
Yeah, well, Farms for City Kids has been an active dairy farm for 20 years. The Springbrook Farm, as part of Farms for City Kids, has been a working dairy farm, which is also doubling as a classroom. So we have kids coming up every week for 5 days, and they get a farm-based curriculum with their teachers and our ed staff. So it's an amazing program. And then 6 years ago, the Cheese House started up. The board decided that they'd like to add value to the milk, which is definitely a losing proposition. Fluid milk's not profitable, especially in Vermont, for a small farm. We only have 40 Jersey cows, so, you know, limited production.
And they don't give a lot of milk up anyway, correct?
Sorry, you broke up there, Greg. Sorry.
So they don't give a lot of milk up anyway, right? I mean, so.
Well, these Jerseys are very productive, you know, as individual cows. But, you know, 40 cows is not a huge amount of milk. And, yeah, so you know, with cheese, we're really seeing, I think, triple a return on the milk.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think that's fairly typical of a farmstead cheese operation. But
how do you think winning the award will affect your mission on the farm?
It makes everybody feel really good, and those kids see, you know, the awards that we win. They come in and they learn about the milk, how the milk is made, about the cows, how you take care of cows, what a dairy barn is, and then they, during the week, they'll get a chance over in the cheese house to go into the aging room, and we suit them up, teach them all about cleanliness, and that's, you know, really a great way to illustrate to them the importance of hygiene, and then they go into the aging room, and when they come out, you know, it's it's a real, you know, they've experienced something that they never imagined existed. Mm-hmm. And they never look at cheese again the same way.
What age kids do you have on the farm?
They're fifth and sixth graders.
Mm-hmm.
So generally speaking, sometimes we get kids a little older and sometimes we'll get some fourth graders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very impressionable age and it's really easy to work with them. Mm-hmm. They're just great.
They haven't become jaded yet.
No, well, you know, they don't have as many distractions as maybe a 7th and 8th graders would.
Right. Do they sleep over? Do they come from far away?
Yeah, they come from Boston, New York, and other cities. And sometimes it's not always urban kids. Sometimes kids from other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
But they sleep at our dormitory where, you know, we have bunk beds and we prepare meals and and there's some classroom space there, too. So, yeah, they stay on the farm. They get off the bus on Monday morning, and they get back on it on Friday.
I want to come up and stay in the bunk beds, dude. I want to come up and make cheese. I want to go into the aging room and be transformed forever.
Yeah.
Can I still do that?
I'd love to be a fifth grader again so I can come.
Deborah,
well,
you're back.
We get a lot of requests, and there's nothing to say that sometime in the future we couldn't organize a little bit more of
an adult-oriented
sessions. But
an adult week.
A grown-up sleepover.
Yes, that'd be great.
Yeah.
We're lobbying for that.
So I was wondering, so Deborah, you as a judge, a former judge, and a person who's handled a lot of cheese at the ACS, what did you think of the? I mean, obviously we all think it's good, but what did you think when you tasted the Tarentaise when you were chopping it up for the Festival of Cheeses?
You mean carefully and artfully displaying it on
when you were cubing it? When you were cubing it in massive cubed piles.
No cubes. You know, I have been a great fan of Tarentaise for a while now, and the Tarentaise Reserve was, you know, not every cheese with more age added is better. And this cheese was absolutely magnificent. It had notes that lasted long and deep. It carried on a long conversation with me. It made me want to have another taste. It was really lovely. And I think, Jeremy, if I can just say, your acceptance speech was so touching in the way that you reached out to the people who make the cheese and the dairy farmers that you work with. It was really, it was very touching how you recognized all parts and all hands that contributed to that effort.
Well, thank you, Deborah. Yeah, I was asking people how it sounded later on because I wasn't sure what I'd said, you know.
Yeah, it sounded great. No,
and I'll also say that in terms of how the wind will affect the farm, our phone has been ringing off the hook asking for the cheese. So
I am hoarding it at Eataly, and you can all come buy some from me if you want.
That's advertising. Now, wait a minute. I have a question. When did you start differentiating between regular Tarentaise and Reserve?
We've really got into that in a serious way, and I'd say numerous customers started buying it about 2 years ago.
Okay, I thought so, because I remember meeting you in Vermont a couple of Vermont Cheesemaker Festivals ago, and you were pulling it out of the bottom, saying, oh, I'll let you taste this. And that must have been the early Reserve.
Yeah, we that's right. I used to call it the troublemaker because you put it out on the board and, you know, everyone would
want it,
get really excited about it. And yeah,
got that going,
and maybe
on
it's
again.
Still a bit of a troublemaker because we really have a very limited amount of it. I mean, I think that, you know, the Tarentaise is essentially modeled on an Abondance from France. And that is typically a cheese, if Greg can help me out with this, but I think it's eaten, you know, in the neighborhood of 4 to 6 months.
It is.
So when we started making it, you know, the word I got was, no, you don't want to age this cheese out. You don't want to do anything else with it. Sell it young. But then, you know, we make it with a lot of discipline and care. And, you know, when we're getting good milk and the cheesemaker's doing a good job, then we'll produce a wheel which is capable of being carried out. And a lot of our cheese is capable of that. But I think there are certain wheels that are exceptional, and they're really well suited to the longer aging.
Mm-hmm. Well, the cheese.
But we have a limited amount. It's yeah.
How can you tell our more innocent listeners how you determine which cheeses are going to be good when they age?
Well, I was pushed to open some Tarentaise at 3 months for purposes of a research project that a grad student was doing. And so we were there with John Putnam and comparing the two farms and the cheeses. And, of course, Thistle Hill being the originator of Tarentaise. And John from Thistle Hill was there with us. And so we tasted these wheels, and I was kind of horrified about doing this. But yet, even at 3 months, that paste expressed a tremendous balance and complexity. And that's what I look at for when we're going to age something out. If you're getting a little bit of a sting early on, you know, you probably don't want to carry that out for 2 years because it's going to become quite exaggerated. And that's not necessarily a desirable trait if it gets too strong. So we're looking for balance and complexity. And those are the keys for me.
Okay. Thanks.
Does that help?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I noticed
this is a person who purchases Tarentaise and the Reserve. They're the younger ones, and Deborah was the younger ones are they're so floral, and the paste is so kind of yielding, and it's clean. And then when I taste the Reserve, I get all of these like savory and kind of like oniony notes, and which are not present at all in the young one for me. You know, so it's a really great transformation for me, and I personally like Alpine cheeses that are aged out a little bit longer. The texture of the cheese becomes for me just really optimal. It's nice and fudgy and dense, and it's not very too salty. I mean, obviously, other than winning, which is the pinnacle of entering your cheeses at the ACS, did you have a good time in Sacramento, hanging out with everybody and being a part of what was going on?
Oh yeah, it was great, and I always do. I mean, it is a great community and extremely supportive. And I mean, we're seeing cheesemakers winning awards that haven't won awards before, and really. Really, it's really great to see all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I have
and of
to
course
say
the
that...
sessions and the yeah.
Sorry, oh. I just wanted to say that I think that if you look back on previous conferences, it is so amazing that every year the cheeses get better and better and better and better. I mean, it's phenomenal the quality of cheeses on that table. Just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with that in all the farmstead categories. But then you still have the industrial ones that still sort of soldier on. Like, I believe I saw Cracker Barrel win three awards.
Too.
You know,
yeah. It's true. They're extra aged. It was shocking. It was And there's always a lot of discussion of how can this happen. And one of the things that I noticed though that made me really happy is that the Cracker Barrel people put the name of the cheesemaker on the label, so we were able to differentiate. You know, one vat from another, so I think that's recognition where recognition is due.
Yeah, that's really interesting you say that, because it's funny, we're sort of the opposite at Springbrook. Like, I've never entered a cheesemaker's name for the award because, you know, we really emphasize the team approach. Mm-hmm. There's only four of us making cheese at any given time in a year, but still. And I'd heard Cracker Barrel ages on wood. Did I get that right?
Oh, my goodness sakes. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that could be a rumor.
That's pretty awesome if they would.
I don't know if I'm spreading a rumor here or if this is...
You're a low-key guy. I like that you could stir the pot a little bit like that. That brings me to an interesting question and maybe a good way to close out. What could have been an elephant in the room, but a new presence at the ACS conference this year, and that was the Food and Drug Administration. They came and talked to us while we were digesting a massive pancake breakfast, I believe. Oh, no, that was the second.
Yeah,
that was
Vermont,
the second one.
Vermont pancake breakfast.
I feel like I had that breakfast every day. That was the one I remember the best. But I was wondering if you could speak just briefly as to what you thought of them and their message in regards to the wood board issue that we were going through earlier in the year.
I just think that they've learned a lot and that they're now ready to take a much more reasoned approach to working with cheesemakers and determining how we're going to establish safe standards for our products. I mean, mm-hmm. I think they're really out in the woods in terms of understanding what we do, but It sounded to me as though they're willing to listen harder and give us more opportunities to communicate. Did you guys get the same thing? Or?
They did a good job of, I think, comporting themselves very respectfully towards our organization, I would say. What about you, Deborah, you think?
I do, and I think that it's a tribute. I think that they're very wise to not ignore the professionalism and the expertise that lies within the organization. They need to make us a friend and not a foe. So I was pleased to hear what they had to say, and I hope that they make good upon those statements, because we have a lot to offer. I thought it was a real tribute to this society. I also understand that the night before,
a couple of them went around on the pub crawl, and I thought, if anything's going to be changed in terms of rules and regulations, there isn't a better way to start.
You get them drunk
on the pub crawl.
Get them drunk, sign on the dotted line. That's how I do all my
really
business.
Encouraging.
Well, I wanted to say thanks to all of you guys. The ACS was wonderful. I had this is only the second time I had been in a number of years, and that makes me not a good guy, but I was really glad to be there. And Jeremy, your cheese is awesome. I know now I'm not going to be able to get any of it, but that's all right.
You have it all. You have it all.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate all of you and your support.
You're the best.
You're very welcome.
And Deborah, thanks for coming on. And Diane, thanks for being here. You're the best. And tune in next week for another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.